Essential Podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming to you literally from a padded room in West Palm Beach, Florida. That's our recently upgraded studio with some foam acoustical padding, so you probably hear some less reverb in my voice. But I'm joined, as always, from Tallahassee by the Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief, John Kennedy.
Hello, George.
And I feel kind of like the Alou brothers without Felipe, because our third podcast regular, Zach Anderson of the Sarasota Herald Tribune, is not with us this week. He's off. But we have dipped into the Gatehouse media talent pool and brought as a very special guest this week in studio with me here in West Palm Beach, Palm Beach Post staff writer Jeff Ostrowski. Happy to have you with us, Jeff.
So does that make us the Ripken brothers?
Sort of Cal, Billy, and what was the third Ripken? I think Fred Ripken that didn't quite make
Curly.
It. Curly. Yeah. All right. Well, so here we are. So let's start out with a big caveat. It's we're right in the middle of recount season. And as we record this podcast, it's Thursday morning, November 15th. We're a few hours from the statutory deadline for the Florida counties to submit their machine recount results and presumably begin manual recounts in the U.S. Senate race and the race for agriculture commissioner. However, always a big however when you're talking about Florida, facts are changing quickly on the ground. There's already been a federal judge's ruling early this morning to potentially allow 5,000 more ballots into the count. There's other court cases pending, and then for every court decision, there's probably going to be an appeal. Deadlines could be extended. Details can change. Remember, above all, this is Florida. However, I think we're going to start talking about the Senate race. And here's kind of a we're going to discuss a general framework for looking at the Senate race between Democrat Bill Nelson and Republican Rick Scott and the recount. And I think we'll discuss it in terms that will stand up over at least for a couple days. And basically this, Nelson began the day trailing Scott by less than 0.2 of a percentage point, which is very close. But it is 12,562 ballots as of this morning, which is a significant and maybe even unprecedented number for a candidate to make up in a recount. Nelson basically is like a football team in the final minute that's down. That needs to score a touchdown, then recover an onside kick, and then score another touchdown, and maybe throw in a 2-point conversion there somewhere. So that there's a bunch of things that need to break his way to change the outcome of this race, and we are going to discuss those in a little more detail shortly. But first, I think I hear some kind of funky royalty-free music playing. John Kennedy, what does that music mean?
George, as many of our listeners will recall, this is Pick a Number, and that is our Pick a Number music.
That's right. That's the segment on the show where we each of us will put forward a number, and then later in the podcast, we will explain what that number means in Florida politics. Now, Jeff Ostrowski, we're going to put him on the spot, our special guest, new to the podcast. I don't think he's ever even listened to one of these podcasts before. He's too busy out there reporting. But Jeff, tell us, do you have a number for the Pick a Number segment?
I'm going to go for 3.5 or okay. 3.5.
Okay, 3.5. Jeff Ostrowski weighs in. John Kennedy, what is your number?
George, I'm going with 2.4.
Ooh, okay. Couple of decimal point entries here. And my number, George Bennett, that's me, my number is going to be 58. So, as always, we encourage podcast listeners to take notes during the Pick a Number segment as long as you are not driving a car or operating heavy machinery. And just to review, George Bennett, that's me, my number is 58, Jeff Ostrowski, 3.5, and John Kennedy with a 2.4. Those are the numbers, and you want to hang on to the end of the podcast and find out what those numbers mean in Florida politics. Okay, so back to our loaded lineup here. I was saying there's basically three things that Nelson needs to happen to change the outcome of this Senate race if he wants to win a fourth term in the United States Senate. And the first of them, and I'm not sure how much longer there's going to be hope for this, is in Broward County, which is a heavily Democratic place and where just about anything seems to be possible election-wise. In Broward County, about 25,000 fewer votes were cast in the Senate race than in the governor's race. And the Nelson folks are hoping that that is because of some kind of massive calibration error in the tabulating machines, and that actually there's a whole bunch of votes there. And in Broward County, they'll probably break 70% for the Democrat. That's what Nelson's people are hoping, that the recounts will uncover this trove of Democratic votes that haven't been counted. A more likely explanation appears to be, though, that the ballot design in Broward County caused some voters to skip the race, which would be bad news for Nelson. So that's one thing, and that should be apparent one way or another fairly soon. The second thing is, in a manual recount, whenever that begins, depending on court cases and whatever, Nelson needs there to be, remember we said he's down at the start of the day, 12,562 votes. So he needs to find really tens of thousands of ballots that that the tabulating machines didn't count or that thought were overvotes or undervotes, but that when they're inspected by the human eye, that will turn out to have clear markings on them showing votes. That's the other thing Nelson needs to happen. And, you know, maybe people didn't fill in the oval next to Nelson's name, but they circled his name, and that'll count as a vote. So he needs that to happen on a massive scale. And remember, whenever they uncover new votes, some of them might be voting for Rick Scott. So he needs to not just find 12,000 of those, but 12,000 more than there are for Rick Scott. And then the third thing, and this is where John Kennedy is going to provide us some of his expertise, is Nelson is relying on a court strategy. He has several court cases pending to try to basically expand the pool of votes from which that they can draw from to try to find votes. John Kennedy, you spent several hours recently in one of these hearings. Tell us a little bit about some of the court cases that are going on that can affect the outcome of this Senate race.
Well, George, they all more or less build around this idea that, you know, Nelson is trying to patch together votes from as many possible places as he can find. He's filed four lawsuits. There are seven right now in Leon County Federal Court that are stemming from this election. Nelson thinks he could get some from the mail-in ballots and provisional ballots that were rejected because signatures didn't match those on file with elections officials. These are roughly, you had mentioned earlier, about 5,000 votes. He got a break early today, just where Judge Mark Walker, the federal judge who heard this case and is hearing all of these cases, gave voters until Saturday to fix these errors, to try to go back to their local elections officials and make corrections. That's not enough to swing it for Nelson, obviously. 5,000, right. You know, if that's the number, Nelson will not get all 5,000 either. So that's a factor.
Right, right. So to be clear, the judge is saying that these 5,000 folks whose ballots were rejected, and that I guess that includes former Congressman Patrick Murphy, who
he complained about
ballot and said, you know, his signature was rejected. But those 5,000 folks now have this new opportunity to prove to their local elections office that their ballot should be counted. And so then whatever number of them are added, then those ballots would be opened, and you know, some of them might be for Scott, some of them might be for Nelson, but that's okay. So that's one pool. What are some of the other legal avenues that Nelson is pursuing?
Well, then you know, of course, he's trying to get basically extend the election as long as possible in one form or another legally. He's hoping for these overvotes and undervotes, presumably votes for him that, you know, were not recorded. As you mentioned, Broward had that roughly 25,000 undervotes recorded in the U.S. Senate race. Fewer people voted in the Senate race than the governor's race. And in that same pool of voters, Nelson is also legally trying to get the standards that the state will apply to whether somebody intended to vote for him, that he would be able to get credit for votes where the intent of the voter is not that clear in the soon-to-be-kicked-off manual recount that's going to go on.
Let me add just one bit of context here, because and you were around too, John, for the 2000 presidential recount. And you know, one of the reasons that the U.S. Supreme Court ended up throwing out or stopping the statewide recount was the determination that in each of these counties, they were using different standards to evaluate what was a vote and what wasn't. So back in the old punch card days, a pregnant Chad in Broward County that might be counted might not be counted in neighboring Palm Beach County. And there so there was a legal problem with that. And Florida tried to address it by setting these very clear guidelines. Punch cards are gone, but for optical scan ballots to say, you know, this here's an example of what should be counted as a valid vote. Here's an example of what should not be counted. So basically, to address the ambiguity problems of 2000, the state put forward these guidelines. But what Nelson is saying is that those guidelines are too rigid. Is that basically the argument he's making?
Yes, that is basically the argument he's making, and he's trying to get a little bit more latitude that might help him. Now, you know, in mid all this, just as Governor Scott, Nelson's opponent in this race, has already appealed this ruling regarding the signature match, that's going to the 11th Federal Circuit in Atlanta. So we could have quick action on that as well. The judge in this case, Mark Walker, locally in Tallahassee, last night, he basically despaired on how he was being asked to rewrite Florida's election code, as he called it, piece by piece. And that is an overlying problem for Nelson, in the sense that a federal appeals court may look at what Walker is doing here, trying to, you know, somehow make some logical sense out of the deadlines that still occur, and the idea that every vote must count, that an appellate court may look at Walker as, you know, kind of creating state law from the bench, which is never something judges want to do. And if they're accused of doing it, there's a good chance they're going to be overturned on appeal. Time is not on Nelson's side. He, if he's able to keep the state elections from being certified on November 20th, he can continue to basically have votes counted, presumably, in one fashion or another. Otherwise, he's left with filing papers contesting the certification of Scott as the winner of the election. That would be filed by November 30th, presumably in Leon County Circuit Court. And his main argument, presumably, at that point, would be that there was a rejection of a number of legal votes that were sufficient to change the result of the election. But then it's a court fight. You know, he might get a favorable judge in Leon County. One judge here, Karen Gevers, already issued a earlier order this week extending the deadline for vote counting in Palm Beach County. But that ruling was effectively nullified by the Secretary of State having the case moved to federal court. But then, you know, the state court ruling, whatever happens in a contest, that would be undoubtedly appealed to the First District Court of Appeal, where Scott has appointed most members. And that court is considered generally favorable to state law and to Republican leaders. So it just keeps getting tougher and tougher for Nelson. And the pressure on him to fold will be enormous, you know, every day after Scott is named the winner. So that's the deadline that he's really facing and looking to avoid that certification.
Right, right. Well, that's so, you know, as I said, I mean, obviously, just, you know, by the time this podcast drops, some particular facts might have changed. But I think the John Kennedy analysis you just heard of the gives you a good framework to kind of look at the courts and the interplay between the state courts and the federal courts and overall just the kind of you know, the things that need to break Nelson's way if he's going to overturn this result. So it's very difficult, but, you know, we're in Florida where just about anything can happen. So now we're going to bring on now our guest who we advertised. And as always, all guests on the podcast are welcomed with our royalty-free surf music. And that music is particularly apropos because Jeff Ostrowski, in addition to being an award-winning Palm Beach Post reporter, is an avid surfer. But we're not here to talk about surfing. We're here to talk about politics. And Jeff Ostrowski first is going to address two topics for us today. One is the this Scott Nelson race, the overall importance, the context of it in the national picture. He recently did a story about that. You can tell us a little bit about that. And then we're going to also talk about the Democrats have control of the Congress now. And one of our Florida Congress members who will have a key spot on the Judiciary Committee. So, Jeff, why don't you walk us through those topics? First, put the Senate race in context.
Right. So on election night, a little over a week ago, it looked like the Republicans had really added to their majority in the Senate. They had held 51 seats, and it looked like they were going to be at maybe 54. But then the plot has thickened since then. So in Arizona, the Democratic candidate managed to win a close race, and we just found out about that earlier this week. And then in Florida, we've got a Senate race that looked like it had been won by the Republican Rick Scott. It now is close enough that it's in a recount. And as you mentioned, it looks like a long shot that that Nelson is going to win that race. But it's the Senate it could have a smaller margin than Donald Trump might be comfortable with. We saw, obviously, with the repeal of Obamacare, the small margin was worked against the president.
Right. So before this election, Republicans had effectively a 51-49 margin.
Right.
And so they lost the Arizona seat that was Jeff Flake.
Correct.
And they lost Nevada, right?
Correct.
Lost okay. Nevada. So that's two down. That brings them to 49. But then they won, off the top of my head, North Dakota.
Indiana.
Missouri.
Missouri, I believe so.
Or Missouri.
Well, yeah, it depends on
those.
Yeah, if you're not from Missouri, you can't pronounce it that way.
Okay.
And then, but the Republicans also look like they're going to win Florida.
Right. So say that would be, in the best case scenario for the Republicans, four, lose two, gain four. So the net gain would be, they would be at what, 53, I guess.
Right. Okay. 53-47. And we still have a Mississippi runoff to be contested this month.
Right.
Everyone assumes that the Republican is going to win there.
You never want to assume too much in politics, but yeah, that's a red state. So that puts added importance on Rick Scott as a because as when Republicans were up 51-49, as you mentioned, on Obamacare, you flip a couple Republicans and Donald Trump's agenda can be thwarted. That's why there was, you know, on the Kavanaugh vote, it was very dicey till the end for Republicans. They want to have more than just a simple majority, and Rick Scott is close to Trump. So the president has a lot riding on this, right?
Right. So, Rick Scott presumably is going to be more friendly to Trump's agenda than some of the other more wild card Republicans who've been in the House. So, like, you know, the late John McCain was one of the key votes against the repeal of Obamacare. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska was another one. Every extra seat or two that the Republicans can pick up is going to help Trump over the next 2 years.
Very much so. And the Senate then is very important to Republicans because Republicans in this election, and this is not subject to a recount, Republicans definitely have lost control of the House of Representatives. The Democrats look like gained 30 or more seats. Some races are still being decided, but Democrats will be in control of the House of Representatives. And that means that one Democrat who's been in the minority from Florida, from Palm Beach County, Ted Deutsch, he is on the Judiciary Committee.
Correct. He's on the House Judiciary Committee, which and he now will be in the majority on the Judiciary Committee as opposed to being in the minority.
And what could that what are the implications for that? You recently talked to Ted Deutsch. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. So the backstory on the House Judiciary Committee is that Donald Trump either fired or demanded the resignation of Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General. Sessions had not been as critical of the Robert Mueller investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election as Trump might have liked. And so the Sessions' successor is an attorney general who's been critical of the Mueller investigation, has called it a witch hunt. So that's caused Democrats to worry that Mueller might be fired by Trump, that the Mueller investigation might be shut down by Trump. And so Deutsch is saying that the House Judiciary Committee would step in if that happens. And Joe Forzano has some sound from Ted Deutsch from earlier this week.
And with respect to Mueller, if he actually fires him, we need to understand where Mueller was going. My hope is that we'll protect him. He'll finish his investigation. He'll publish a report. That report will be made available to the American public. And we can make decisions based on those conclusions within that report. But if the President of the United States chooses to stop that process before it's complete, then the American people still will deserve the opportunity to hear where it was going. And the way to do that is to bring in Mueller and have him explain that in front of our committee and the American people.
And that was Ted Deutch speaking on Monday about his plans for on the House Judiciary Committee. And the incoming chairman of the Judiciary Committee has made similar comments.
Right. Who's that? Is that Nadler?
Yes.
Okay. And now the big concern is, if for Republicans or for if you're a supporter of Donald Trump, is if they would bring impeachment proceedings. Has anybody mentioned the I word yet?
I did not hear anything from Congressman Deutsch about impeachment. And in fact, Lois Frankel was at the at that event on Monday where Deutsch spoke. And Frankel, the Democratic congresswoman from West Palm Beach, actually asked a few of her supporters to hide their more incendiary signs, calling Trump a liar. So. So no, I didn't hear anything about impeachment, and to the contrary, I heard some hints that maybe congressional Democrats want to play nice to an extent.
Sure, or at least give that appearance, right? So but when you're talking about Mueller and so if they start to have problems, if Mueller gets canned, and the House Judiciary Committee looks into it, I think you'd be laying the groundwork perhaps for calling it obstruction of justice, and then that's a step away from calling for impeachment or whatever.
Correct. And that's Deutsch did, without mentioning impeachment, he did talk about his obstruction of justice and didn't accuse Trump of it, but said he definitely wanted to look into that possibility.
Okay. So once you start talking obstruction of justice, then there you go. Okay. Well, that's interesting. And there's an example of one of the elections have consequences, and having Democrats in control of the House, the Judiciary Committee is going to have a much different look and could be a much more significant thumb in the eye for President Donald Trump. And Lois Frankel, who you mentioned, is her congressional district includes Mar-a-Lago. Just a little note there. Now, speaking of the Democrats taking control of the House, I thought we would just bat around. We're still waiting on some big outcomes in the election, but John Kennedy and Jeff, let's talk about some of the winners and losers in this election. John Kennedy, give me an example. Who would you say is a winner in the midterm in Florida?
The 1.4 million felons in Florida who have regained their right to vote. This is after 64% of Florida voters approved a constitutional amendment that ends what has been a very difficult process of having to go through the state's clemency board for approval to get your voting rights restored after you've been convicted of a felony. Those convicted of murder or sex offenses are not included in this poll, but those eligible now are expected to be able to go to register to vote. And the state's corrections department, Secretary of State's office, the court system, and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement are all expected to share data that is going to make this process more successful for felons. But, the classic devil in the details, Republican Ron DeSantis, who is expected to be sworn in as governor in January, he opposed the amendment, and foot dragging is always possible, maybe expected. Watchdog groups, though, say that they're going to keep watching to make sure that no interference is made in carrying out the will of the voters in this case.
Interesting stuff. So you have this group of people that will presumably be allowed to vote, but we'll have to see how many of them try to do that and what the response of the state government is to doing that. Okay, interesting. What about losers? Jeff Ostrowski, do you have a potential loser you can mention from this election?
Okay, well, one obvious loser is Brenda Snipes, the Broward County election supervisor. She's been under attack not only from Republicans, but also from the media, and even Democrats can't be very happy with the ballot design that seems like it might have sabotaged Bill Nelson's chances in Broward County.
Yeah, you know, her hometown newspaper in Fort Lauderdale editorialized the other day defending her, kind of saying that, you know, there was not evidence of fraud in her office, as Rick Scott and Donald Trump were alleging. But the defense was that she's simply incompetent. So it's not really a vote of confidence in her to say she's not corrupt, but she's just incompetent. So, yeah, not a good election for Brenda Snipes. John Kennedy, do you have another winner or loser for us?
Well, maybe another winner out of this election was marijuana advocates. Maybe. If Nikki Fried holds on to her currently wafer-thin lead in the agriculture commissioner's race, Fried is a Fort Lauderdale attorney who has lobbied on behalf of the medical marijuana industry in Florida, and she campaigned against the state's slow implementation of the medical marijuana law passed overwhelmingly by voters in 2016. She wants to have regulation of the industry moved under the Ag Commissioner's office out of the Department of Health, and she wants to encourage expanding its growth as a crop, and also she wants to allow for the use of smokable marijuana as a treatment option. So, you know, she may be in a position to push for these changes as Ag Commissioner.
And one of the striking things about Fried was how much she outperformed other Democrats on the statewide ticket. So the Democratic candidates for Attorney General and CFO lost by wide margins, but Fried did really well. And presumably part of it is that she was an advocate for medical marijuana, and medical marijuana has proven very popular in Florida.
No question. Okay, so I've got one winner and one loser. My winner is the 13-member or soon-to-be 13-member Democratic U.S. House delegation from Florida with, as we alluded to earlier with that Ted Deutsch segment, Democrats will be in the majority in the upcoming Congress. And in Florida, only four members of Congress from Florida now have been in the majority ever in their careers. One of them is Alcee Hastings, the dean of the Florida delegation. He was in office back in 92 in the pre-Gingrich days. You have Debbie Wasserman Schultz, has spent a couple years in the majority from Broward County. Kathy Castor over in the Tampa Bay area was elected in 2006. So her first 4 years were in the majority. And the only other one is Ted Deutsch, and that was only for a few months. He won a special election in the spring of 2010 when Democrats were in control of the House. And then so he was in the majority for a couple months before the Republican wave hit of 2010. So the Democrats will find themselves in a new position in the coming Congress. My pick for a loser is pollsters. In the primary, we made note of how the abysmal record that public polls had. Nobody picked Andrew Gillum to win the Democratic primary. A lot of pollsters picked the Republican primary to be close between Ron DeSantis and Adam Putnam, and it wasn't. DeSantis won by like 20 points. Well, this time around, in the governor's race, and even if by some miracle, even if Gillum is able to pull it out, I think it's worth noting there were 35 polls, public polls in the general election, at least as logged by Real Clear Politics. Only two of them had DeSantis ahead. Most of them had Gillum up by a small margin, you know, 2 or 3 points, which is usually around the margin of error for a statewide poll. So you could argue if your poll had Gillum up by two and he ends up narrowly losing, that the poll wasn't really wrong. It was in the margin of error. But all the polls, you know, seem to err on the side of Gillum. And Quinnipiac, a couple of days before the election, its final poll of Florida had both Andrew Gillum and Bill Nelson winning their races by 7 points. So, you know, not a good election season, either primary or general election, for pollsters in Florida.
And I'll throw out one other winner, and that's opponents of greyhound racing. The ban on greyhound racing passed pretty easily as a constitutional amendment. And since then, I've talked to a few dog tracks. The Hollywood dog track says it has already run its last greyhound race, that there are so few people in the grandstand that they're not going to bother to race dogs anymore. The track in Sarasota says it's going to wind down after this season. And the Palm Beach Kennel Club seems to be the holdout, saying that they're going to keep racing until the bitter end in 2020.
Wow.
I've got one more loser if you want a quick one. It's kind of a surprising one at that, too. Some property owners. The only constitutional amendment defeated by voters was the very first one, Amendment 1, that would have exempted home values between $100,000 and $125,000 from being taxed, except for school taxes. Supporters said this was going to mean about $230 in property tax savings to the average homeowner and $645 million in savings across the state, but it failed to get the 60% voter approval. Cities and counties had fought this one very hard, since property taxes is where they get the bulk of their revenue, and the changes could result in, you know, cuts to local services, garbage pickup, emergency services, all those kind of things. things, but a few thought that voters were going to go against something that, you know, could help homeowners. But with home ownership in Florida at record low levels and the local governments fighting it very hard, maybe that was enough to hold it to what it wound up with. And that was 58% support.
Wow. Some interesting stuff that was perhaps overlooked with all the recounts going on in some of the high profile races. I think I hear again that funky royalty free music playing. Yeah, there it is. And that means it's time to return to our pick a number segment. So as you note takers know, but just for those that didn't take notes, I'll review. We'll go first to you, John Kennedy. Your number was 2.4. What was that number?
2.4 is $2.4 million, and that's what was saved annually by the state after Governor Rick Scott sold the state's two airplanes when he took office in 2011. You know, multi-million dollar Scott, you know, whose investments and his so-called blind trust have drawn a lot of scrutiny during the recent campaign. He flies around the state aboard his own 12-passenger Cessna jet, gasses it up out of his own pocket, and pays for a private pilot. Whoever is Florida's next governor, you know, right now it's looking like it's going to be Republican Ron DeSantis, he's going to have to provide his own transportation. It's likely that the Republican-led legislature, which usually touts fiscal conservatism, is going to have to pony up for a new DeSantis ride. You know, $2.4 million is what it cost to operate the state's two older planes that were sold in 2011, which also included the cost of, you know, 11 full-time state employees in the state's air pool. So, you know, I think getting the new governor some new transportation is certainly going to be one of the legislature's early priorities.
Ah, interesting overlooked number there. Jeff Ostrowski, 3.5. What is that?
3.5 is the Florida unemployment rate. So it's near a record low. It's not the lowest ever. We were a bit lower than that, but it's certainly very good. It's below the U.S. unemployment rate, which is at a 50-year low. And we'll see a new number tomorrow, Friday. It's a safe bet that it's going to be in the neighborhood of 3.5%. And that is more than a point lower than the unemployment rate was 2 years ago when Donald Trump won Florida in the 2016 presidential election.
There you go. That unemployment rate tends to be a baseline in political discussions whenever the new governor takes office. We'll see where it is when that person runs for re-election. Well, my number was 58. 58 is kind of the if you're a Democrat on the top of the ticket in Palm Beach County, 58 is the kind of ceiling for the percent of the vote that you're going to get in Palm Beach County, which is a key Democratic county. In this past election, Bill Nelson got 58.4% in Palm Beach County. Andrew Gillum got 58.2%. If you go back in 2008, Obama, in his first run for president, got 61% of the vote in Palm Beach County. But ever since then, Palm Beach County has been in the 58 neighborhood. Alex Sink got 58.1 in 2010. Obama's reelection, 58.2. Charlie Crist, 58.8 in 2014. The lone exception to that 58 rule was Hillary Clinton in 2016. She only got 56.6% of the vote in Palm Beach County. A little sign of trouble when a Democrat is below 58 in this very blue county. Well, that will wrap up another Inside Florida Politics podcast. As always, it's been my honor to be your host. I'm George Bennett from the Palm Beach Post. We've been joined here in our foam-padded studio by Jeff Ostrowski, Palm Beach Post staff writer, and from Tallahassee by John Kennedy, the State Capitol Bureau Chief for Gatehouse Media. We've been assisted here in West Palm Beach by the team of Corzano. That's Thomas Cordy and Joe Forzano. And don't forget, next podcast, we should have Zach Anderson of the Sarasota Herald Tribune joining us. And as always, our thanks in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, to the man behind the curtain, Adam Fish. Thank you.